Gospel of Matthew, chapter 22, verses 15 through 22. Then the Pharisees went and plotted to entrap him in what he said. So they sent their disciples to him, along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and teach the way of God in accordance with truth and show no difference to no one. For you do not regard people with partiality. Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax." And they brought him a denarius. Then he said to them, "Whose head is this, and whose title?" They answered, "The emperor's." Then he said to them, "Give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." When they heard this, they were amazed, and they left him and went away. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise you, Lord Jesus Christ.
Good morning, everyone. Have you guys ever seen the show American Gladiators? That's how I feel up here. I'm going through an obstacle course trying to get to the podium. So last night I preached from the floor. Today I'm preaching from the stage. So, you know, about, I don't know, 5 feet way farther and a couple of feet up. I didn't think it would be as daunting as it is, but go, just be with me as I preach. Normally when I preach, Kevin's not here. So I had like a little joke about Kevin not being here, how I'm not Kevin, all this stuff. But Kevin's here, and he told you that I was preaching today, so that just comes right out. Today I'll be preaching on Matthew 22, 15 through 22. When I asked a few of my friends for some advice on this passage, they all said, "Well, I've only ever heard the pastor who preaches this talk about funds and money." And I went, "Wow, being the youth pastor at MCF, I don't have to worry about tithing, and I don't have to worry about, like, the kids giving money, so I don't think I'm going to talk about money." And luckily, I was blessed, and God gave me a different vision for my message. So hopefully, when you guys hear it, it'll be able to be applied to you. Here we go. If you have an iPhone, please raise your hand. Okay, you can put your hands down. If you have a Samsung, please raise your hand. Okay, you put your hands down. Now, if you have a Google phone, a Motorola, or some other smartphone device, please raise your hand. Okay, there you go. You put your hands down. Now, I didn't ask you all to raise your hands to start an iPhone versus Android debate. Although I personally feel that blue text message boxes are much better than green text message boxes. You can hear me talk about that in the youth group. No. I did it because on every one of those smartphones, there is a calendar. For me, my calendar is very important and very detailed. Almost everything that I do goes on my calendar. My work schedule, youth group gatherings, hanging out with friends, meetings, doctor's appointments for my grandma, all of it goes on my calendar. And in a few short seconds, I can unlock my phone, open my calendar app, and do some quick calculations to see all the things that I have in my calendar that have claims on my time. Now, of course, you guys can't see it because you're so far away, but it's just an example. Put that down now. Not everyone here uses their calendar to the extent that I do. Some of us don't use our calendars at all. But all of us do have different things that hold claims on our life. Different responsibilities, obligations, and commitments that demand our time. Commitments like family, friends, work, school, sports, community activities, and pets. And managing it all can turn into an extreme balancing act, where we are carefully trying to manage commitments that are increasingly challenged, not just one another for time and energy, but ultimately can challenge ourselves for the proper attention, time, and resources needed. Now, maybe this balancing act has just gotten worse over time, not just as each of us has gotten older, but also throughout time. Because the problem seems to be an ancient one and is discussed in today's gospel lesson. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Jesus? Well, we start off thinking that it's a legitimate question. Too bad we all know that the people asking this question are trying to trick Jesus. They're not there to ask him for his advice. They're there to try to find a way to trip him up. Matthew 22, 15 through 16 says, "Then the Pharisees went and plotted to entrap him in what he said. So they sent their disciples to him, along with the Herodians." Now, what's actually going on in these two verses is pretty out of the ordinary. Why? Because this is truly an enemy of my enemy is my friend situation. The Herodians and the Pharisees and their disciples are working together. But to give some context, the Herodians are pro-Roman rule and authority, whereas the Pharisees are anti-Roman rule and authority. These guys don't like each other. This is Lakers, Celtics. Yankees, Red Sox. As a Red Sox fan, go Astros. This is Raiders, Broncos. Tortoise, hare. Okay. In this passage, the two opposing forces are teaming together to try and take down Jesus. And do they do a good job? Well, initially they do. At least they think they do. Because they ask Jesus a perfect question. So that no matter how he answers, he would be offending one of the two groups. If Jesus openly says, pay the tax, then he is siding with the Herodians, who support Rome. But it puts him at odds with the Pharisees. And in the Pharisees' mind, more importantly, the Jewish people. To pay the tax, in effect, would mean submitting to Roman rule and submitting to the Roman authority. This would put Jesus in a horrible light because the Jewish people did not want to hear that. But on the other hand, if Jesus openly says, don't pay the tax, then the Jewish people and the Pharisees are all for that. But then that means he's in open rebellion against the state and can easily be placed in prison or worse, and have his message be silenced. So like I said, it's a perfect question. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Jesus, to Caesar? With this question, the trap is set. They got him. Two ways to answer. But like Pastor Kevin said in his sermon last week, this is where Jesus is smart, because he isn't going to fall into their trap. He doesn't argue the way they expect him to argue. In Matthew 22, 18 through 22, Jesus responds to them. But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax. And they brought him the coin. Then he said to them, whose image is this? And whose title? They answered him, Caesar's. Then he said to them, give therefore to Caesar the things that belong, the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's. When they heard this, they were amazed and left him and went away. Time out. Sidebar. Go with me real quick. Jesus successfully overcomes the who's, W-H-O-S-E, versus who's, W-H-O apostrophe S, grammar confusing. And Jesus doesn't even speak English. He speaks Greek. If he can do it, It gives me hope that maybe one day I too will be able to get over this confusion. Back to the message. Jesus recognizes the men are asking this, the men who are asking this question are up to no good. He's aware of their malice and accuses them of putting him to the test and calls them hypocrites. Jesus then asks for a Roman coin, the sort used to pay the tax. And when one is produced by those questioning him, Jesus confirms that the image and inscription on the coin are indeed Caesar's. He then finishes the discussion, this failed attempt at trapping him, by saying, "Give therefore to Caesar the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." In a sermon based on this text by Charles Hoffecker, he says, everyone present there knows what Jesus means by this. The coin can be given to Caesar. After all, it has his name and portion on it. It is issued by his authority. He is entitled to have what is his. But more importantly, the true king, God himself, is also entitled to his property, to what bears his portrait, and that is every human person. For each of us is created in God's image. We bear the divine image just as much as the Roman coin displays Caesar's profile and name. Giving to God what belongs to God is the big issue. It is through resolving this issue that you come to know what to do about everything else. What Jesus tells his interrogators in response to their one malicious question offers us a basis for resolving our many questions about divided loyalties, which we raise in a spirit of honest discipleship. And to close out the gospel, verse 22 says, "When they heard this, they were amazed. They left him and went away." The group of people questioning Jesus left. They were shocked. We had the perfect question. He got around us. But that's not where the story ends. And more importantly, that's not where the meaning of the story ends. Because just like this has meaning for the people surrounding Jesus at the time, this also has meaning for the people surrounded by Jesus in this time. We, you and I, are to give to God what belongs to God. We, who are made in God's image and bear his name as his children, we are to give ourselves to God. Not just once, not whenever you can, not when you feel like it, but repeatedly, over and over and over and over and over again. Giving ourselves to God is to be characteristic of our lives, something that comes to define and shape who each and every one of us are. Genesis 1:27 says, "God created humanity in God's own image. In the divine image, God created them. Male and female, God created them." When we begin to do this, when we begin to give God what belongs to God, when we begin to place God first in our lives, we can begin to see things the way he sees them. And we can begin to react to things the way he wants us to react to them. We will be able to see all our responsibilities, obligations, and commitments, the ones that we've made in our lives, and begin to put them in their proper place, in their proper order for us, instead of trying to balance everything all at once. We'll be able to give family, friends, strangers, coworkers, employees, and all the people in our lives the fitting amount of attention that they need. We'll be able to give our wild, crazy, busy lives to God and see how different they can be when God's in control as opposed to when we are in control. To quote Charles half actor is saying. Again, he says, nobody says this is easy. All of us make mistakes along the way. But loving God first and foremost gives us the wisdom and the orientation to love others and their uniqueness in the ways that are right for them and for us. Once we give ourselves absolutely to God, then remarkably, we are free to give to others in ways that are gracious and life-giving, rather than distorted and destructive. All of our loyalties, worthy of his name, blend into a single one. No longer are these loyalties divided. Instead, we recognize how deep down they are in agreement, for each is the invitation from God. Now, if you're like me, and you're a control freak, you're probably hearing the word give a lot. And you might be a little concerned about all the giving up you have to do, because the process can be overwhelming. So let me share something with you. Last week I told the youth group, during our lesson time, that sometimes, every once in a while, once a month, it's really hard for me to wake up on Sunday mornings. The song, captured by the digital age, is my alarm tone. The opening lyrics say, love, you've captured me again. Love, you steal my heart. It's a great song about the love of God and all the different ways God's love has affected the artist. It's a great song to wake up to on Sunday morning, right? God's love. Well, sometimes the song plays, love, you've capped, and bam. Before captured can even be finished, I've slammed my hand on the snooze button, just hoping for 9 more minutes of sleep. But once I get here, once I see Eleanor and May in the morning, once I shake hands with AJ in the sound booth and shake hands with David during church, once I get my big bear hug from Al, when the youth start showing up for their lesson, none of that stuff matters. The feeling of exhaustion I felt when I woke up, the grumpiness I felt when I started my drive, all of it's gone. In its place is joy, laughter, and happiness. In its place is me receiving multiple blessings that God has placed in my life in the form of the people of MCF. When we get the tune just right with God by giving ourselves to him and to others in the best way, there's a transformation that occurs. We no longer picture ourselves as givers. Instead, we are receivers, recipients of God's divine generosity. This is the truth of our lives, and we recognize it. Matthew 6:33 says, but strive first for the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you. And to close, Give Caesar what belongs to Caesar, but give God what belongs to God. Honor to the appropriate degree every just claim on your life, but give God the entirety of your life. Give to God who gave it all to you.